That is. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Daniel Drake. I'm a lawyer from Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm representing Brett Begay in this case. This case involves a blanket prohibition on contact with children under the age of 18 and going to places where he was likely to encounter children under the 18 and having contact with children under the age of 18. The problem with those is that they are over, those restrictions are overbroad. They cover children for which there is no factual basis for protecting, according to this facts in this case. And secondly, they are vague in some respects, particularly when it comes to where he knows children are likely to be. Under the statutes that are at play here.
Would you mind just going over why the appeal waiver doesn't prevent us from reaching your issue?
The issues that are raised here have to do with due process notice as to what he is prohibited to do, and that's a constitutional issue. And secondly, the impact on his ability to travel about his community and do things of that sort, which is a constitutional liberty freedom. And so under those circumstances, we submit that the appeal waiver does not apply. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Though I guess the question is there any error in a condition of supervised release that would be covered by the appeal waiver, or by your analysis, is the appeal waiver really ineffective to bar review of any claim?
Our argument is that it's ineffective because these are constitutional violations, and therefore they are illegal sentences or a portion of an illegal sentence.
So is there a case that would make condition number 13 unconstitutional? Because we have very similar provisions we've upheld, for example, United States v. Daniels and United States v. B. and other cases which are similar.
Yes. Yes, you have upheld restrictions on conduct with children and things of that sort, but in language different than what we have here. In this case, you have restrictions or limitation words that are not present, whereas they are present in those that you have upheld. And typically, I would point to a case like B, where you say that he can't go to a place where children are known to be primarily there. It's primarily for a child. The same is true with Reardon and Daniels, where they talk about a place that is primarily used by children, known to be used by children in B, and in Sotero, they talk about regular contact with children. Well, here we have a likely to be condition. And we also sweep into this children, particularly males, for whom there is no factual basis in the record.
And could you just, one other thing to clarify, did your client challenge condition 13? Because when I looked at the record, I did see there was a challenge to conditions 11 and 12, but I didn't see one to condition 13.
She did not number a specific challenge to number 13, but she did raise a vigorous challenge to contact with children and restrictions upon his ability to be with children. That's the very issue that comes up in special condition 13, because it deals primarily with contact.
So if we were looking at this, if we decide that there wasn't actually a challenge to condition 13, and so we were looking at it for plain error, what case would say that this condition was plainly erroneous?
Well, I first of all, I would argue that the plain error does not apply because she spoke to the language of contact with children, and that is included within the 13th special condition. As to the case that would apply or cases that would apply and permit the court to review the plain error, the argument would be that the first two cases, that is to say the first two elements, are met because this should not have occurred in the fashion that it did. It was error and it was plain. We then turn to the issue.
So it was whether plain error based on your argument as opposed to plain error based on any case that's directly on point. Is that what I'm understanding? There isn't a case directly on point. You're just saying that the court got it wrong. I understand that's part of your argument. But usually for plain error, we're looking for something pretty specific.
Yes, I think if I understood you correctly. The argument is that it's going to go back to what the court said, what the court imposed at that particular time, and given the fact of this particular case, it is clear that it was error. And then with respect to whether you want to acknowledge it, I would argue that that your discretion is to do so, and to do so to prevent an untoward circumstance. That is to say, the cases that I pointed out that distinguish this are done basically on a fairness issue, a reasonable anticipation. And in this particular case, there was not such. I would like to save about 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
So you're right on the nose for that. Why don't we hear from the other side, and we'll make sure you get a chance to respond.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Voigt.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is William Voigt. I'm an AUSA from Phoenix on behalf of the United States. The district court did not impose any illegal sentence, and that is the only thing that would allow the defendant to escape an appeal waiver that clearly covers these standard conditions of supervised release. Any fair reading of the district court's sentencing discussion at ER 24 to 27, four pages of discussion that focused almost exclusively on the supervised release issues, shows that she carefully considered the objections that were made, that she responded based on record evidence and on common sense, and she imposed a completely legal sentence well within her wide discretion as a district judge to impose. I would point the court to four main categories of facts that the district court talked about and that were based on record evidence that showed.
Can I interrupt for just a minute? And that's to say, I wanted to address Judge Ikuda's question as to whether or not it was sufficiently objected to, whether we have this as plain error, assuming that for the first question, what is cognizable as constitutional error.
Yes, with respect to standard condition, special condition 13, which is the one that was being discussed, the defendant made no such objection below, and that is the condition regarding going to locations like parks and playgrounds where children are likely to be. The defendant on ER 15 and 17 at the sentencing hearing referred to objecting to the condition that he have no contact with the victim or the victim's family, and a blanket condition of no contact with individuals under the age of 18. Those are conditions 12 and 11. The same statements were made in the sentencing memorandum. So as this court said in the Santiago and the Watson cases, objections have to be specific. It's not fair to ask district courts to divine those sorts of objections based on nebulous language. Even in Watson, there was an objection to the particular condition, but not on the grounds that was raised on appeal. And this court said it's still plain error.
I want to come back to the plain error question, but now from a different direction. If we were just addressing this as a question of whether it is a constitutional condition, that is to say, number 13, would it be constitutional to prevent him from going, for example, to a McDonald's or a gas station?
I think that not on these particular facts, Your Honor. If it was somebody who had perhaps use gas stations to abuse children, then you might have a different sort of situation.
That's the answer I expected. Now, if I read 13 in a certain way, it strikes me as though, children are likely to be in a McDonald's. So this, if I just read this without sort of bringing to it a Houston Generous analysis or something else, it strikes me that it's unconstitutionally overbroad. Would you agree that it's unconstitutionally overbroad if I read it to include a prohibition on going to McDonald's?
I don't think so. I think it might depend on what you're doing and where you're going in a McDonald's. You know, there are parts of McDonald's where they have like children's play areas. I think that would clearly be covered. But if he's simply going through the drive-through or going to,
I thought you'd already agreed with me that it would be unconstitutional to prevent him from going to McDonald's. And I'm not talking about the children's play area. I'm just talking about walking in, ordering from the counter. And I thought you agreed that that would be unconstitutionally overbroad.
I think that if this, again, on this particular case, if that was the way the condition was to be read, then there would be a problem here. But I don't think it is, because I think that the condition provides specific examples of the kinds of areas that it's talking about. Yeah. Parks, schools, playgrounds.
Okay, the reason I keep interrupting you is that the time is limited, and I understand your response, which makes perfect sense to me. But there's nothing in here that makes it clear that it's limited to parks, schools, etc., because it says including, it doesn't say such as. And this may be sort of, it may be imagining problems when there are none. But it would be, I think, a much better condition if it said such as parks or where children are likely to congregate or particularly for children or whatever. It is susceptible, I think, to a too broad interpretation. And that comes then back to the plain error as to how likely it is to be read too broadly. I wish you had written it in a way that would that I think you're actually wanting to construe it, but it's not quite written that way. That's my problem.
I think Your Honor is right to come back to the plain error question as disposing of it, because it is difficult to ask the district court to address something that isn't actually being brought up. And had it been, it might have been able to be tweaked in a way that would avoid it. Because the government, as we say in our brief, is not arguing that merely incidental contacts or unknowing contacts are something that would give rise to a violation. And I'm not aware of any defendant ever having been violated for such a reason. What this court said in the Gonzalez-Aparicio case, as Judge Ikuda was channeling, is that if there's no controlling authority that says this is improper, and you have at best conflicting authority that could go either way, that's the closest authority out there, it cannot, as a matter of law, be plain error.
It seems to me that you're conceding that McDonald's wouldn't be covered, right? And I'm having trouble seeing what the difference between one of the specific things is parks, right? And it's not just parks have adults and children at the park, but you know that if you go to a park, there's probably going to be children there. And I don't see how that's any different than a McDonald's. McDonald's has both children and adults. It's not necessarily a place just for children, but you know if you go to McDonald's, there's going to be children there. So I actually think Judge Fletcher's, I'm having trouble with your answer to Judge Fletcher's question, because it seems to me that I think you could very easily say that a McDonald's is exactly the same as a park.
I think I would go back to where you are going in a McDonald's, Your Honor, because I don't think the drive-through area of a McDonald's would be the same as a park.
The parks have playgrounds. McDonald's has playgrounds. But parks and playgrounds are listed separately in your list, right? So I think if you're trying to say that, then it makes the whole list having parks on this list superfluous. I mean, I assume you would agree that if he goes to a park, he can't go to a park. He can't go to a park and say, I knew there might be children at the park, but this isn't a children's park. It's just a park that has children there. He wouldn't be able to say that, right?
I agree. He could not go to a park.
Well, that's exactly the same thing that he'd be saying if somebody tried to enforce this about a McDonald's. He'd say, somebody would say, didn't you know there would be children at a McDonald's? And there's always children at McDonald's.
I think that I appreciate what the court is saying. I don't think that it merits, it reaches the plain error standard of review, given the absence of an objection below. And I don't think that a person of ordinary intelligence.
Let me ask you, why doesn't it, I guess? So why doesn't it merit the plain error standard review? Because it seems, what I'm saying, I guess, is that it seems to me that just reading it as a text, it could certainly be read that way, easily be read that way, and logically. The only thing keeping it from being read that way is sort of all of our intuition that, man, McDonald's just seems like a bridge too far. But that's not a textual thing.
I think that the case law regarding vagueness, and again, there was no vagueness objection either, so we're now adding plain error arguments on top of plain error arguments. But the question of whether he would understand this is judged by a person of ordinary intelligence under the court's case law. And as I think everyone is agreeing that, you know, when you look at it, you know it and you understand it, and it's appropriate. And so I don't think a person of ordinary intelligence would be confused about, you know, whether they can go to...
I may not be of ordinary intelligence, but I'm actually a little bit confused. Can he go to Yosemite?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you wrong.
Can he go to Yosemite National Park?
Yes, I believe he can go to Yosemite National Park. I think that the park that's referenced here is not...
We're short on time, and we keep talking over each other, and it's not your fault. It's just a product of the computer thing. Now, children are very likely to be in Yosemite, correct? And Yosemite... correct?
I would again say it depends on where we're talking about. I don't think that it would be like asking, can he go to, you know, a city or something like that. I think you have to look at the specific area where he's going. There's a playground.
But wait a minute. It says including parks. Now, does that mean, again, is my problem is just reading this with enough precision so that I understand it, so that he understands it, and that someone seeking to enforce it understands it.
I said...
Children are likely to be at Yosemite, and it says you can't go there if they're likely to be there, and that specifically includes parks.
I think I would come back to the cases like B and Reardon and Daniels, which include the very similar list, including the word parks in Reardon, including the word parks in Daniels, including the word parks in B. Those are not cases that this court has ever found to constitute plain error or constitutional error, and so it couldn't have been plain error in this case.
Yeah, no, I've got problem with the plain error more than I have problem with the vagueness of the condition.
Judge Fletcher, can I ask him one question about the condition 11? I realize he's out of time. But.
No. We get to go as long as we want. The limitation's on him.
Look, counsel, so one question I have on condition 11 says he can't be with his own children, which he doesn't have, but maybe he'll have in the future, right? And as I read the cases, there is cases that have language to say you can't be with your children or with any children, but I think most of them that I saw have language that is subject to getting permission from your probation officer, which isn't in condition 11. And so the difference between those cases and this case, I guess, would be, and I think you make this argument in your brief, that, well, but he can, there's still a sort of an escape hatch here. He can go and ask, you know, let's say he ends up having children, he can go and ask the court, which is a little bit compelling to me. But the question I've got for you is, are there any cases that are a broad prohibition like this that says you can't be around any children, including your own, that don't have the probation officer language, that where a court has upheld that language saying, well, yeah, but you could get a court to change that condition if you end up having children or you need to be around?
The cases that I saw, although I'm not sure that all of them specifically engage with this particular point, but in the Williams case, the condition was to avoid the company of children. And in the LeBlanc case, it referred to the district court to not abuse its discretion in imposing a condition that limited access to minors. So I don't know how deeply that went. But I would say with respect to this, that this is a defendant, unlike cases like Wolfchild, where there was a problem with that, who abused the family relationship, repeatedly raped a member of his family over the course of years, and took advantage of the family relationship in order to gain access to that child over those years. So the limitation in this case is entirely supported by the record, and the district court made findings.
And I'm sorry to cut you off because I'm sort of out of time too, but a follow-up question, I guess, is just because I'm not familiar with, how hard is it to, as a practical matter, versus getting permission from a probation officer, how hard is it to actually go before the court and say, my wife is pregnant, we're gonna have a baby, I'd like to be able to be with that child. I'm not familiar with how difficult of a process that is.
In my experience, the way that it usually works is that the defendant's lawyer will reach out to the government and say, we would like to modify the conditions of supervised release in this way. We've talked with the probation officer and they support or oppose it. What is your position? And then they'll file a motion either noting the government's opposition, in which case there'd be contested briefing, or if there's no opposition. And, usually the parties are, going to be on the same page or they won't be. If there's no opposition, then the court will enter it pretty quickly. That is my experience and how it works practically.
Thank you, counsel. I'll be interested to see the answer to that question from your opposing counsel. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any further questions from Mr. Voigt from the bench? Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Voigt.
All right. There are a couple of things that could have prevented this from happening. The pre-sentence report and the evaluation that the government counsel places a lot of stock in, both talk about the defendant being in the company of or being chaperoned, if you will, by a healthy family member. Had those things been included, by example, they might have made this thing much easier for all of us. Those are found on page 97 of the ER and 132 and 133. In those circumstances, I think the situation, the way it is written, causes confusion. It causes him to guess, and it's overbroad in its sweep. Because of that, we ask that the conditions be vacated and the case remanded to the district court. The defendant, we believe, has shown that these restrictions are greater than necessary and that the facts cited do not justify the conditions imposed. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
But Judge Fletcher, can you address my question to the government's counsel about, with regard to condition 11, what is the real practical difference between a condition that says you can't be around any children, including your own, without the permission of a probation officer, versus just a flat condition that you would have to, and then having to ask the court to change that? I'm not familiar with that process. How onerous is it to get conditions like that changed? If the hypothetical I gave where somebody's actually having a child, and you think that would be a pretty sympathetic ask to get it changed.
Yeah, I can't speak from personal experience in cases I've represented to date. Most of my time was spent on the other side of the table, but I tend to agree with what Mr. Voigt has said about the general process. So it can be done. It just takes not a small act of Congress, but it takes some work.
Okay, and is it true that Mr. Begay at this time does not have children of his own? That's my impression.
He does not. So that's a sort of a hypothetical issue.
Yeah, that was my impression. Okay. Any further questions for Mr. Drake? Okay, thank you. Thank both sides for your helpful arguments. United States versus Begay now submitted for decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you.